Hello, and welcome to Nubian Know-It-All. I'm Rai.
I'm Kay.
And there's going to be spoilers, obviously, because we're going to be talking a lot and discussing a little about a really nerdy stuff.
That's true. There's so many spoilers.
So many spoilers. So, if you don't know what the premise is, I'm going to know a lot about our topic this week, and Kay's going to know a lot about our topic next week, and we're just going to try and explain it to each other. So, if that's what you're into, thanks for tuning in. Now, this week, we're going to be talking about Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Kay, how much do you know about Full Metal Alchemist?
I know a little bit. I also know that there were two anime adaptations, one before the manga was done.
That's right.
That sucked, well, according to a lot of folks. And then one that was after it was done and actually follows the story.
Mm. Well, I don't know if I'd say that the first one sucked. I know that it diverged heavily by episode 25. And it got much darker than the manga did, which is honestly kind of impressive, in my opinion.
I didn't know it could get darker, considering the stuff I know that is canon.
Yeah, well, it's impressive.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But we're not going to be talking about the first Fullmetal Alchemist anime. We're going to be talking about Brotherhood, the one that came a few years later when the manga was fully complete and that most people consider one of the greatest animes of all time. So, do you know anything else, or just that there was...
I know some stuff. I know about several homunculi. I know about there's some things you don't try to do with mm-hmm. the alchemy. I also know about that one dude who screwed up his daughter and the dog.
The infamous Shao Tucker.
Well, yeah, I know about that.
Well, surprisingly, they play a very small part in the anime story-wise.
That's good, because yeah. I wouldn't want to deal with that more than just it exists.
Yeah, emotionally, they have a ripple effect, but they don't have much of an impact for the rest of the story. Now, you said you wanted to handle this in the stories presented in the show, right? Instead of from the first, earliest element. Well, in the first episode, we meet our main characters, Edward and Alphonse Elric.
Now, I do know a bit about them. I just don't remember which one's which. I just know one is a robot because there's some things you can't do.
Mm. He's not a robot. He's a suit of armor. It's hollow.
Close enough.
There's no mechanisms inside.
I wasn't thinking that. I was just saying that he's a big dude in a metal suit, and that the metal suit is him.
Well, I only draw importance to that because it's such an important part of his story arc, because there's literally nothing inside that suit.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, Ed is the...
Oh, he's Ed, the short guy.
Yeah, who's actually the older brother, and he is the Full Metal Alchemist. See, when you become... I see that look you're giving me. Most people make the same assumption you did, that Alphonse is the Full Metal Alchemist because he wears that big old suit.
Well, because it's hollow and it's made of metal,
yeah.
So therefore...
You'd think.
He is a Full Metal.
That's part of the joke.
Alchemist.
Yeah. Everyone always thinks that Alphonse is the Full Metal Alchemist upon first meeting him, but then they find out it's Edward, who just looks like a 12-year-old.
How old is he?
He's like 16.
Why does he look like a 12-year-old?
He doesn't drink his milk. He hates milk. But there is...
Is there a joke about that in there?
There is a story reason why he's shorter.
Okay.
And he does go through a growth spurt by the end of the story.
Okay.
But anyway.
I was going to say, he's small boy.
Yeah, so we meet Ed and Al. And Edward is what's known as a state alchemist.
I think I know what that is.
Okay. Well, it becomes rather important as in the pilot episode, the one before we pick up where the manga begins. There's a state alchemist going berserk in the central command city. And he's a water alchemist, so he's very versatile. Mm-hmm. He almost destroys the city, but Ed and Al stop him, along with the help of some other allies that we're going to talk about very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And an antagonist that we're also going to talk about very shortly.
Ah.
So,
Wait, is this the guy that's yelling about the shape the country's in?
Because
that one's really funny, especially if you know what's going on with that.
I don't. You'll have to be more specific. There's a few guys that yell about the shape the country's in.
You don't understand the shape this country's in.
That might be the guy. I'm not sure.
That's so funny.
Like, in context, yes, that's hilarious.
In context, it's hilarious. He doesn't... Spoilers! I know what this means, despite never seeing the show.
Yeah, she's been on the internet, and she's lived with me, so she knows a bit. Anyway.
So I know...
So.
That it's not talking about the state of the country. It's talking about its literal shape.
So anyway, we are in the country of Amestris, which is totally not based off Germany in any way. I mean,
the
leader of the country is the Führer.
Yeah, okay.
And in case, in normal conversation, in case you couldn't pick up that he's in charge, his first name is King. So...
Okay.
Yeah, people call him King Bradley, and for a while you're like, oh, is he the king? But his official title is Führer.
And then you're like, oh.
And they'll say Führer King Bradley. I'm like, is Führer King the actual? No, King is his name. His last name's
Bradley?
His name is King Bradley.
Oh my gosh, that's dumb.
Well, there's a reason for it.
I know there's a reason for it, but it's still dumb.
Anyway, so in the first episode, we meet Ed and Al. We get the concept that they're alchemists, which is a form of advanced science and a bit of magic that allows them to deconstruct and reconstruct materials as long as they understand its molecular composition. Most of the time, alchemy is treated very scientific and mathematical and chemically accurate. But it's magic, obviously, because
alchemy.
Yeah, there's no way through just science you could understand what the composition of wood and reshape it by drawing a circle.
Wood is so complex.
Regardless, the principle.
I have a biology degree. That's why I say that.
Regardless, so because alchemy is so complex, and for each different kind of material, you need a different circle. Most alchemists only specialize in one material. Ed and Al are exceptions to that rule. For example, you'll have, like in the first episode I mentioned, a water alchemist. Mm-hmm. Granted, water is very versatile, but still, its root, it's water. He's transmuting.
It's literally just H2O.
Yeah. And one of the other...
simple, but powerful, because everything has water in it.
One of the other main characters is Roy Mustang, who is arguably the most powerful state alchemist.
This is fire.
Fire,
right?
Alchemy, yeah. Don't ask me how it makes sense either. But he is the only person who's actually in possession of fire flame alchemy, because his master was the one who designed it. And his master grew ill and died before it became published. And even if he hadn't, he was not planning on publishing it because it was so powerful. So Roy is the only one in possession of flame alchemy. There's also silver alchemists, the strong arm alchemist, Alex Louis Armstrong, who is one of my favorites. He specializes in combat alchemy, and that is very vague, but it's like artillery.
Ah, okay.
So like he'll punch stones or metal and reshape it into like ballista bolts, things like that.
Okay, I was going to say, please tell me it does not become immediately a gun.
No. Then there's the Crimson Alchemist, Kimberly, who specializes in destruction alchemy. And I know that probably doesn't mean anything to you, but there is another character who specializes in just deconstructing things, where, like, the process of alchemy is, you know, deconstruction, reshaping, and reconstruction, but Kimberly just destabilizes its atomic level so it explodes.
So just explosion alchemy.
Yes. Yes. One of the reasons he's so dangerous.
Oh, look, a bomb.
But Ed and Al, as I said, are exceptions to that rule because they've done the taboo.
Wait, Which one?
So, in alchemy, the main rule is equivalent exchange, which we've covered.
Well, and, I know about. Yeah, we haven't talked about it, but I know about it.
Yeah. Where you have to, in order to get something, you have to give something an equal value. There are also tenets of state alchemy, which is to obey the military. Because to be a state alchemist, you're pretty much funded by the government.
Okay.
You submit yourself to work for the government, and in return, you are given grants for your alchemical research.
Okay.
And the tenets are: you obey the military.
That's oddly specific. Yeah. That it's specifically the military.
Well, it's a military state.
I'm saying what I think about the state.
I know.
The government.
I
okay?
know. the second is: do not transmute gold. To not destabilize the economy.
The second is no cheat codes.
And the third one is also the taboo to alchemists, which is do not perform human transmutation.
Ah, yes. That one. That's why I said which taboo. Because it could be that it's like you can only do one.
Yeah.
But also, I know about that one.
Yeah, so
I know about that
even
one.
Even if you're not a state alchemist, that's a colloquial taboo. That you
well,
do
because it's a bad idea.
Yeah, because even if you have all the materials that could make up a human body, what could you possibly give in exchange for a human soul?
Another one?
Yeah, exactly. But Ed and Al performed the taboo.
Attempted to perform.
Yes. They attempted human transmutation, which to bring back their mother.
How old were they at the time, though?
Like 10-ish. They were children.
And I'm not really considering that breaking the taboo on purpose.
No, they knew it was the taboo. They have all their father's research. Their father, von Hohenheim, is a brilliant alchemist, one of the most brilliant that's ever lived. But he was largely absent during their childhood.
Yeah, I could tell.
And when their mother died, they lived with their family friends, the Rockbells.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Pinako Rockbell, the grandmother of the family, was Hohenheim's old drinking buddy. And Winry is their best friend, Winry Rockbell, her granddaughter. So when their mother, Trisha, died, they lived with them for a while. Then they were taught proper alchemy and combat by another individual named Izumi Curtis, who will come in later. And when they felt they were ready, they tried to perform human transmutation. And the thing with human transmutation that we find out later, learning some information that we don't find out till later.
Okay. I, to be fair, I know random bits of information.
Technically speaking, the way that we think of human transmutation, someone I loved died, so I'm going to perform human transmutation to try and bring them back, cannot be performed.
Okay.
Because even if you create a perfect human body, you're not going to be bringing someone back. You're not bringing someone back. Back from the dead to fill that body. It's just a body without a soul in it now, which means it's going to die soon. Mm-hmm. That's how most people consider it, because obviously, to perform the taboo, you'd have to be in a very vulnerable and broken emotional state to do it. Mm-hmm. For Ed and Al, it was losing their mother. For another character who has performed human transmutation, Izumi Curtis, her child was stillborn. Mm-hmm. So they both tried. And as payment, because while they didn't get the human soul, they did get something else.
Oh, no. Something else is never good.
So, when you perform human transmutation, while you are also you could also technically perform it on yourself. Because human transmutation. Mm-hmm. It's not just, I'm going to create a human body. You could also perform it technically on yourself, on a living person, and potentially have no major repercussions as long as you're not changing much. But because they tried to bring someone back, a special thing happened. Ooh. They were flung to what's called the Portal of Truth, and they had a chat with what in the story is the closest facsimile to God.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. There's a lot of religious imagery and themes throughout Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
I know a little bit about
that. We have, like, you know, polytheism and things like that, and Ishvala, which is another god that's important to a specific group of people. But the truth is what's mostly considered to be the closest we can get to God.
Okay.
When you perform human transmutation, you are flung through the portal of truth and brought before truth itself. Now.
Nice going, guys.
So, what they received was the portal of truth. They got a glimpse inside. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means is, normally, for alchemy to work, you have to do all the scientific calculations, understand the material perfectly, draw the transmutation circle specific to that material, and then funnel the tectonic energy released through, at least in Amestris, tectonic energy to perform alchemy, along with a bit of the truth's power through the
circle to do what you want.
But when you go through the portal of truth, most of alchemy's secrets are revealed to you. Everyone has a portal of truth. It's how they can perform alchemy in the first place. The truth's power flowing through them to perform the transmutation. But by seeing into the portal of truth, that information is just in you. And so you don't need a transmutation circle anymore. You are the conduit.
Okay.
Which is why Ed, Al, and Izumi don't need to draw circles or have tattoos or materials that have the transmutation circle engraved in them. They just clap their hands to form the circle, touch the material they're altering, and the transmutation occurs.
Okay.
Which is one of the other religious symbols, because when they clap their hands together, it looks like prayer.
Okay.
So.
Quick question.
Yes.
I'm also in the medical field. So. Any human transmutation is bad?
Any human transmutation, if performed on someone else, will do this. If you perform it on yourself, because Ed does, and at one point, though he does have an alternate power source to act as the payment, but he doesn't really gain anything else from it except for being flown through the portal. But regardless, as far as we're aware, human transmutation in general is bad, and it will result in bad things because of the payment. But what's your other question?
Because I'm in the medical field, what if you're just trying to remove cancer?
Well, there is such a thing as medicinal alchemy. It's completely different from human transmutation. We don't go very much into it.
Is it different from human alchemy if you're like, hey, this part of the body right here that is not working right, we're going to fix it?
Well, see, they never go into medicinal alchemy.
Well, I know, because it's not very interesting. But I'm in the medical field. I care a lot about this.
We do have some people who are practitioners of medical alchemy, Dr. Marco, for example. But we never get a full explanation for how it functions. But we do know that the human transmutation circle is how certain things occur.
Like, you might as well say what those certain things are.
The creation of a philosopher's stone, unless I'm mistaken, which I very much might be. It's a lot of information. I think it's the same transmutation circle.
Probably, considering the shape the country is in.
Yeah. but I'll get back to philosopher's stones in a minute. So, as payment for opening the portal of truth and finding and gaining all the secrets held within, they both pay prices. Ed loses his left leg, I believe. He loses one of his legs.
Okay.
And Al's body is gone.
Okay.
To
how come that wasn't split more evenly?
Don't know.
Because that's not very fair.
Maybe because Ed was the older brother. I don't know. Regardless, but to get Alphonse back, he performs another transmutation. He forms a blood seal. He uses his blood to make another transmutation circle inside a suit of armor that he knocks over. And perform and give something else to get Alphonse's soul bound to the armor through the seal. He gives up one of his arms.
Okay, I did know he didn't have an arm.
Yeah, so he lost his leg to the human transmutation, and he lost his arm to get Al back.
I'm fairly certain he also lost his brother to the human transmutation.
Oh, he was very desperate at that point. Al was all he had.
Yeah.
While Al is thankful to be back, he also is in a pinch as well, because this suit of armor is not a substitute for a body. It gives him form, but he he doesn't sleep, he doesn't eat, he doesn't drink, he can't feel hot or cold, he can't feel pain.
He's a ghost in the shell.
And he's a child, so on top of that. So he handles it remarkably well, all things considered.
Yeah.
But from this point, their driving modification for everything they do. Modification? What the fuck did I?
Motivation.
Their driving motivation is to get their bodies back.
Well,
yeah.
It's mainly
in Ed's case, it's to get his limbs back. But in the time being, he has substitute limbs through a form of engineering that the Rockbells actually specialize in. It's called automail.
Okay, I didn't know about automail.
Yeah, Winry is a genius automail artist. Mm-hmm. So, as soon as they were able to, Ed got certified as a state alchemist so he could get time and funding from the military to look into research of getting their bodies back.
Are they technically trying to scam the government?
Technically, I guess, but like the government's well aware of their intentions.
Okay,
so,
then they're not technically trying to scam the government,
right.
Which is,
mm-hmm.
Well,
So
I've seen some of the uniforms, Rye.
Mm-hmm. Regardless, so they performed the taboo and joined the military. One of the earliest assignments in the anime that we see is when they go to Lior to deal with a false prophet who is claiming to have been blessed by their sun god and is performing magic, pulling things out of thin air that he shouldn't possibly be able to do. So they go there, they confront the man, and he's using a item that Ed and Al are desperately after that I've already mentioned, the Philosopher's Stone. They're after it because...
I am concerned as to how this man has this.
Yeah, I'm getting to that. They want that so they can get their bodies back because it kind of breaks the rule of equivalent exchange. Seemingly, they can make something out of nothing, and that breaks the rules of alchemy. So they want it so they can get their bodies back. Through the confrontation, they discover something about the Philosopher's Stone. It isn't creating things out of nothing. Something is being given, and that's energy. The Philosopher's Stone is pure energy being released to perform transmutations without giving more material. And by that logic, a Philosopher's Stone can be burned out and expended. And that's what happened to this one in Lior. He used it too much in the fight, and it disintegrated.
Well, that's kind of funny.
So after proving he was a fraud, Ed and Al go back to the Western Command. Eastern Command, which is where Roy Mustang and General Grumman are. And I know that General Grumman means nothing to you, but I'm sure you know the name Risa Hawkeye.
Oh, it's Hawkeye.
Yeah, Hawkeye. That's her maternal grandfather. And Colonel Mustang's commanding officer, though that is actually never mentioned in the show, that they are related. It's a pretty interesting detail, though. So they go back there and start looking into... a bit of medicinal alchemy to try and figure out if that might be the key, which is where they meet Xiao Tucker, and that storyline plays out. But while they're dealing with Xiao Tucker, with that storyline, we find out a bit about how the sham prophet got the Philosopher's Stone. He was given it by two individuals we meet at the end of the episode who then kill him because his usefulness is ended.
Okay.
Lust and gluttony.
Ah, yes, I remember these guys.
Yeah.
I know a little bit about these guys.
Yes. Initially, we have no idea what their deal is. All we know is that they have similar color palettes. They seem to be in the know. They have the same tattoo in different places, and they are very much evil. Later...
And they're named things that have to do with the seven deadly sins.
Later, while Ed and Al are dealing with Xiao Tucker and... another character that's about to come up at the end of that fiasco, because Xiao Tucker created a chimera, which is when you use alchemy to fuse two different animals together. He tried to create a sentient speaking chimera, but the only way he could do that was by using a human as a base, and he ended up using his daughter so he could keep his alchemist certification and his funding, which is majorly fucked up.
Yes, this is the thing I was referring to earlier.
Regardless, while
with the dog,
while they're busy with that, Lior is descending into chaos because the false prophet is still spouting his shit, which is weird because we saw him get killed and eaten.
Oh, he got eaten
by
too.
Gluttony.
Ew.
Yeah, he's gluttony. That's his whole thing. He likes to eat people.
Well, I didn't know he ate people.
Yeah, but and so we're confused as to how he could do that until he goes up and talks to Lust and Gluttony and transforms into another being like them, and they call him Envy.
Oh, so he's just pretending.
Yeah, we find out that Envy has shape-shifting abilities.
Okay.
So, while Ed and Al are...
In case you doubted that it's the seven deadly sins,
yeah.
Here's another one.
While Ed and Al are dealing with the ramifications of the Xiao Tucker incident, a person shows up and murders Xiao Tucker and puts Nina, the daughter mixed with the dog, out of her misery. And after doing so, he leaves the premises and asks God to accept their souls into his loving arms.
Okay.
He later, in the next episode, tracks down Ed and Al and starts trying to kill them too. And we're initially confused, but during his speaking, he gives the idea that he believes that creation to be the province of God alone, and therefore alchemists are performing a form of heresy. And where are there are creators like them, there should be destroyers like him.
Okay, Mr. Serial Killer.
Yeah. In this fight, Roy Mustang, the flame alchemist in charge of Full Metal, because along with their rank and their funding, they also get titles. And so so Ed was given the title Full Metal Alchemist by Roy because he thought it was funny.
Well, yeah, I get that.
Roy was given his because it was fitting. He's a flame alchemist, so therefore he is the flame alchemist. So Riza Hawkeye, Roy's right hand and very much love interest if they weren't both confined by the ranks of military, because there's not interpersonal connections allowed in the military, show up along with a handful of others and Alex Louise Armstrong to save Ed and Al.
Is this the Armstrong?
It's not General Armstrong. This is Major Armstrong, the buff guy.
When I say the Armstrong, I mean the cool guy everybody likes.
Oh, yeah, this is the Armstrong. He is the stand-up awesome guy that we know and love.
I was like, please tell me this is the one we all like.
Yeah, so they're all trying to save Ed and Al from Scar, which is a problem because Scar, seemingly, whenever he touches something with his right hand, it disintegrates, so to speak. Or rather, it doesn't disintegrate, it explodes into its pieces.
It's just the deconstruction thingy on the right hand.
Yes. They don't know that yet, but as a viewer, I know that Scar is performing half of alchemy. He's performing the deconstruction phase, but he just stops there because he's bent on destroying things. It would be a short fight if it weren't raining, and therefore rendering Roy powerless.
That is... You're so powerful, but you get nerfed by the weather.
Well, see, he uses a special material in his gloves, which he has this transmutation circle stitched into. They're called ignition gloves. When he snaps, it creates a spark. And from that spark, he's able to perform flame alchemy.
But it's raining, so he can't do the spark.
Yeah, when ignition gloves get wet, they don't create a spark. So
again, you get nerfed by the weather.
So Major Armstrong just begins beating Scar in a hand-to-hand combat, which he's putting up a surprising fight considering how fast and strong Major Armstrong is. To which we discover that Scar, I don't know if I mentioned that's the name of this individual.
No, you've just been saying it the whole time, so I assumed it was
That's the
name
of this individual. It has shown extreme prodigious martial combat as well as his deconstructive arm. At the end of the fight, his sunglasses and hood fly off, and we see that he has deep suntan skin, shock white hair, and red eyes, and an X-shaped scar across his forehead. Now, those details are important because having deep brown suntan skin, white hair, and red eyes means he is of a specific ethnic group. He is an Ishvalan.
Oh, no. Is this the group that got...
Getting to that.
Yeah.
That's mentioned immediately after. They talk about why he would be doing this. And that's because of what is called the Ishvalan Civil War. But that is just the term to make it sound better. The actual official name for it is the Ishvalan War of Extermination.
It's a genocide.
Yeah.
Yay!
And this is also where I'm going to bring in another important character to the story. Maes Hughes, Colonel Mustang's best friend, who is a superior officer and ally to Ed and Al, and just an all-around outstanding guy. He works in the information department of the military, so he is in charge of handling all the records and stuff.
Okay.
In this fight, Ed's metal arm got completely destroyed, and Al's body almost got completely destroyed.
Because it's the destroying dude.
Yeah. So while Roy and Maze and Riza, or I guess I'll say Mustang Hughes and Hawkeye, because most people are referred to by their last names, except for the main characters in this show. While they're talking about what their next steps for hunting down this serial killer, who we actually have found out is specifically targeting state alchemists, there have been at least 3 other murders up to this point.
He's a serial killer, that makes sense.
Yeah. While they're handling that, Armstrong takes Ed and Al back to their hometown so that Winry and Miss Rockbell and Panaco can patch them up.
Okay.
On their way, they have an encounter with a character that Major Armstrong recognizes, a Dr. Marco. He was another state alchemist who was involved in the Civil War, like all the state alchemists were. This was actually the first conflict where state alchemists were used as living weapons, which no one was particularly fond of.
Yeah, the moment everybody went, mm.
Yeah. They may be praised as war heroes.
Do we like our government?
Yeah. No one was happy with the Ishvalan War of Extermination, except for the prejudiced assholes.
Which, most of them were not.
Yeah. Regardless, so Armstrong recognized him and was surprised to see him because he had been missing for several years.
Uh-oh.
So they go to talk to him. And
I am suspicious.
And they talk to him, and he is in possession of a crude Philosopher's Stone. And when Ed and Al, who are still beat up, ask about it, he refuses to share any of information about it, saying that it's cursed research.
You might want to elaborate why it's cursed, because that doesn't help.
And he refused to part with the stone because...
Well, I get that.
Yeah. So,
but still, if it's cursed, you tell people why, so they don't do it.
So, but as they're leaving, he does give them information on where his research notes were, so that if they decode it, they would be able to find the truth within the truth that he would not be willing to speak about, so they could find out for themselves without him having to tell them. As soon as they leave, he gets abducted by Envy.
Well, that makes sense, unfortunately.
Yeah. So they go to the Rockbell Estate, and they get patched up. Pretty much all we learn from this location is exactly what happened after the taboo, which was they buried the thing that they thought was their mother, burned the house down so that, as soon as Ed got his certification, so they wouldn't be able to turn back. And we find out that Winry's parents were both doctors who were killed during the war. Because they went to the front lines and were helping both sides regardless, because they both
needed...
That's
how doctors were.
Yeah, but they both died during the war. And so...
I wonder if it was a quote-unquote friendly fire incident.
It actually wasn't. We find that out a bit later. So as soon as they get back to Eastern Command, Ed and Al are now talking with Major Hughes. Colonel Hughes? Probably Colonel Hughes.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be able to keep all these ranks straight. All I know is that he ends up lieutenant colonel by the end of it. Or brigadier general. I don't fucking know. Regardless. Ranks. So they meet up with Hughes and they have fun talking with him, as well as two of Armstrong's subordinates. The only one of which who really matters, even though they're both charming, is Second Lieutenant Maria Ross.
Okay, Maria Ross.
So they escort Ed and Al around, and they're surprised by the rank he pulls and the amount of money he has. They also find the library where the research was suspiciously destroyed in a fire. But luckily for them, the person who used to work there, who is now out of a job, not only is a compulsive reader, but also has a photographic memory. So she manages to transcribe all of Dr. Marco's notes, which are disguised as cookbooks.
Cookbooks.
Because all alchemists disguise their research notes so that others can't...
steal their research.
Yeah, so Marco's are cookbooks, and for example, Roy's is a date book.
Okay.
But regardless... And after helping them with that, Hughes comes in and is like, man, we've had a major bump in the intelligence department with that fire because it was in a military establishment. It was a military-run library. So they put this woman in front of Maze, and he immediately hires her.
Okay.
And so she starts transcribing literally everything she read in that library, which was literally almost everything.
Okay.
She doesn't play a major role for the rest of the story, but I just thought it was funny to bring that up.
Okay.
So after a week of research, Ed and Al crack the code of the research of Dr. Marco's journals, and they are appalled by what they find.
Ah.
The only way to create a philosopher's stone is with human life.
I kind of knew that.
Yeah, because it's such a big thing about the story.
Don't know what shape this country's in.
The only way to create a philosopher's stone is with numerous human sacrifices.
That's part of what the genocide was about. That's, which is still bad.
Yeah. So while they're investigating, they share this with Hughes and Armstrong, and they try and figure out the next place to go, and they find this place called the Fifth Laboratory. And they think it's important because not only is it a military-run place that's now condemned, but also Marco had connections with it during the war, if I'm remembering correctly. And also, it's right next door to a prison. So
it's a bit sus.
So they go and investigate, and they find two more suits of animated armor, like Alphonse, who were prisoners who are now guarding the location. Because when they investigate, they find, indeed, a human transmutation circle for creating a philosopher's stone in the basement of the lab. But as soon as they're about to get fucking answers, Lust and Envy show up and destroy the one suit of armor. They leave the other one, but he doesn't last very long anyway.
Okay.
He's a charming character. He's called Barry the Chopper, but he was a serial killer, so take that with a grain of salt.
A lot of serial killers are charming.
Anyway.
Unfortunately.
Well, he's not charming in the way of so charismatic. He's charming because he's hilarious.
Oh!
Regardless. So, along with breaking the armor, they also carry Ed out of the lab in his unconscious state, saving his life as the lab crumbles around him. Because even though it was foreclosed, it was in a bad state. So it had a reason to.
It was foreclosed for a reason.
Yeah.
Multiple reasons.
Yeah.
But for a reason.
Yeah, regardless.
One was that it was actually unstable.
Yeah.
But all the other one is covering up war crimes.
Yeah. So, Winry drives down there, or drives?
Is it driving? Do they have cars?
They do, but not many people do. So, she takes a train down there.
That's
more accurate. She takes a train down there to repair out to fine tune Ed's arm because there was a single screw she forgot, and that threw him off in the fight. Because automail is a very precise science.
One screw, okay.
Yeah, it was an important screw. Regardless, she goes down there to fix them up and stays with Colonel Hughes while she's down there, which gives us time to meet his loving wife and adorable little daughter. And we get so attached, and then they have to leave. And Hughes, who is in the information department with all this newly transcribed information, something clicks.
Uh-oh. this is the part. Yeah. I know about this.
Because he reads about what's happening in Lior. Mm-hmm. He reads about the information in Lior. And this is all happening after Ed and Al's recovery, because during that time, the Fuhrer comes down to talk to them and tells them that he suspects that there is corruption within the upper ranks of the military and asks for them to keep a lid on it for now. But Hughes puts a few things together after hearing about the insurrection in Lior, the Ishvalan War of Extermination, and other combat uprisings that are happening around, because Amestris is a very militant and expansionistic nation. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty much at war with all their neighbors except for the east, which is a giant desert.
Because it's hard to conquer.
Because there's no one there. Mm-hmm. So Hughes, after putting all this together, gets confronted by Lust, who tries to kill him. Actually fails, because while she does wound him in the shoulder, he throws a shadow dagger right between her eyes and walks out. Is about to call Roy on a military line, rethinks it, goes to a public line, and gets shot by Envy.
I was going to say, he's the one I know dies.
Yes.
Yeah. And
that one also ripples throughout the series in a much more prominent way than Nina.
He's a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Good call on not calling on the military.
The important thing about Envy killing him, though, is he did it in the form of Second Lieutenant Maria Ross. Mm-hmm. And that means that later, the military, or whoever's in charge of whoever's investigating, thinks it's her.
Yeah.
And so puts a warrant out for her arrest. Well, but like I said, Ed, Al, and Winry are on the road right now. They're traveling to do more investigation and stuff like that. Actually, Ed and Al are going to see their teacher, Azumi Curtis, to get more training. And they're very nervous because they know she's going to kill them when she finds out they performed the taboo. On their way, they pass through a place called the Rush Valley.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't know that they did the taboo?
They only met her when she was passing through their town. And they found out she could do alchemy when she stopped the flash flood.
Okay.
She's not a state alchemist either. She's a housewife. Who happens to be an alchemist, but never wanted to get state certified.
Because a state certified, you have to do research and crap. She's just there doing stuff.
And you also have to be a dog of the military.
Yeah.
Which is not the most appealing thing after the Ishvalan War of Extermination. Regardless, so
yeah.
Ed and Al only met her when they were, like, chillins. They knew a lot about alchemy already because of their father's research, mm-hmm. and his library was at home. But they learned how to fight and more about how to apply it from her.
Now she is going to kill them.
Oh, yeah. Also, we are running low on time. I didn't think it'd take this long.
I did.
I really want to talk about the whole thing, though.
Time to speed up. So, speed run time.
Yeah, so they pass through Rush Valley, which is an automail hot stop. So Winry wants to stay there for a while, which they leave her there and we're picking up on the way back. While they're visiting Azumi, Alphonse gets abducted by a gang, at the head of which is an individual who calls himself Greed. And Greed is interested in how Alphonse is perpetuating himself because he wants a body that will live forever. And Alphonse is like, because Greed finally explains that he's a homunculus. And
which is a newsflash, but...
Yeah, and Alphonse recognizes the tattoo that he has with the ones that Lust and Envy had when they saw them at the fifth laboratory. Mm-hmm. And Greed also demonstrates that the homunculi have incredible healing powers. Literally got the top of his head knocked off with a hammer and regrew it in seconds. Mm-hmm. So Alphonse is like, why do you want to know how I got this body? And he's like, well, believe it or not, I am still mostly human. Because regardless of how powerful a homunculi is, on a chemical and biological level, they are still human. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of times, but how many times they can reform, because at their core is a philosopher's stone.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. So Al tells him a bit of what he knows, at which point Ed shows up because he tracked
out. Hey, you kidnapped my brother.
They get in a fight. We find out that Greed has all the homunculi have certain powers. Greed has a shield that covers his whole body that's nearly indestructible, but because he mentioned it, his body was mostly human, Ed was able to figure out that it was mostly a carbon shield because a third of the human body is made of carbon. And then Izumi shows up and also joins this ass-kicking Kong test.
Okay.
This fight goes on for a little longer until Izumi has to stop because her what the portal took from her is acting up. It took some of her internal organs.
Okay.
Yeah. So they have to sit this one out, which is but they don't have to worry because suddenly the military is there to
without anybody calling them.
Yeah.
That's sus.
And you'd be excited that Major Armstrong is there, but the Fuhrer himself is also there.
Why is he there?
Well, we don't have to wonder for long because in the same episode we find out he's also a homunculus and he's Wrath. The only reason we didn't put that together to begin with is because his Ouroboros tattoo is literally in his eye. But the eye is under an eye patch most of the time. So, yeah. Major Armstrong also decides not to tell Ed and Al about Hughes because he thinks it'd be too hard for them to find out right now. So they go back to Eastern Command.
They kind of need to know that, though.
Yeah, so they start going back to Eastern Command, and on their way, they meet a individual from a neighboring country. His name is Ling Yao, and he's accompanied by two of his bodyguards.
He's an important person. I do remember he's an important person.
He is. Ling Yao, the 12th son of the Emperor of Xing, which is the very Chinese-inspired nation on the other side of the Great Desert, to the east of Amestris.
Who are probably very glad that the desert's there.
Yeah, Ling shows up, and he's accompanied by two personal guards, an older man named Fu and his granddaughter, Lanfang. They're both very clearly ninjas.
Wait, oh, it's the older man's granddaughter.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I've got a moment of, huh?
Not Ling's granddaughter. If anything, they're romantically entangled.
Yeah, I figured that, and I was about to go, ew!
And he's there because he needs to find a way to become immortal. Because with his father in waning age, and many assassination attempts lined up against the whole family, the clans are about to start going to war, so he needs a way to ensure his rule.
Okay.
He'll become an important character. But well, he literally follows them back to Eastern Command. They have a brief they have a conversation, they have a scuffle, and then he follows them back to Eastern Command.
Okay.
At which point they find out about Hughes, the second lieutenant Ross gets the blame, and Roy supposedly kills her. But secretly he put together that this was sketchy as fuck. And,
well, I mean, yeah.
And actually arranged to have her smuggled out of the country. Yeah, because he actually ran into Ling on accident. Because Ling, one of his quirks, whereas like Ed is sensitive about being short. Because
he is a short boy.
Which the reason for that is because Ed now performed the transmutation at the same time. Mm-hmm. At the same transmutation, and Al's entire body was taken. Ed is having some of his nutrients siphoned to keep Al's body alive on the other side of the portal.
Okay.
Which is also why he's so tired and hungry all the time.
Because he's literally eating and sleeping and drinking for two.
Exactly.
Hey, welcome to being a mother.
Yeah. And I know this is all very convoluted, but I want you to keep in mind there are no less than like 7 parties at work at any time in this show.
Oh gosh.
Or at least 6. We have the Elric group which is, you know, Ed, Al, and Winry for the most part. We have Roy's group, which
makes sense.
We have Ling's group, who showed up. We have Scar, who actually gets a group of his own by complete accident.
Okay, whatever.
Because Scar comes across a homeless person, and Scar, despite being gruff, is still, you know, honorable, so treats him with respect. Mm-hmm. And so this guy kind of attaches himself to Scar. Comes in useful later, but for the most part, he's comic relief.
With the serial killer.
And another person from Xing with Scar, who happens across him, and he treats her with respect, though he is still gruff with her, so she thinks he's, you know, kind enough. mm-hmm. To show her around, because she's here for the same reason Ling is, but she's from a different clan. So she's also going to take the opportunity to kill Ling if she gets the chance.
Yeah, we get that. Moving on, we are running out of time.
Yes, we are. And then you have Hohenheim and the homunculi. So Ross gets framed, and Roy arranges to have her smuggle it out of the country through the desert, which is where we with one of Ling's bodyguards, Fu. So that takes him out of the story for a bit. But we also find out in the desert there was once a prosperous, highly advanced civilization for its time.
Oh no! Whenever you hear that, you know that they've done fucked up.
The Mesopotamian inspired city of Xerxes,
named after a Persian.
Yeah, but Ed pokes around there for a while, finds some very interesting hieroglyphs, as well as a lot of Ishvalan refugees.
Good.
Who are initially antagonistic to him, but then their elder is like, we're not stooping to their level. So this is also where we find out a bit more about Scar's backstory, because it's heavily implied that Scar's the one who killed Winry's parents.
Okay.
Which we find out later to be the case, but he did it in a blind fury after not being properly medicated for pain.
That's true. I work in a hospital. People will swing at you if you are not prepared and you are not aware that they can or are willing to, or are out of their mind enough to swing at you. They can seriously hurt you.
So now that everyone's in on the plan, Ling, Edward, Al, and Roy and Hawkeye are all in on the plan, which, by the way, I've completely skipped over something very important. While Ed and Al were dealing with greed, Roy killed Lust.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's there.
He killed her.
Yeah, by himself.
Dang.
Reza did take some good pot shots, but compared to what Roy did, it's not a contest. Roy's the one who killed her.
Okay.
But regardless, so he's injured from that encounter.
I would expect him to be more injured than probably he is. But moving on, because we have very little time left.
So now the plan is to capture one of the homunculi. Each of them have their own reasons for it. Ling wants immortality. Ed and Al want answers. Roy wants proof that the senior staff is corrupt. So they're all working together to catch one. And the idea is Ed is going to make a very showy display of his alchemy to bait Scar to attack him. And because for some reason he's important, that they've noticed he's important to the homunculi and don't want him to die, they'll intervene to save him. So, in that moment, they're going to capture them.
I love how 3D chess this is.
Yeah. And in this fight with Scar, we find out his backstory, how his older brother was interested in alchemy, as well as the Xingyi's alkahestry, which is a variant of alchemy, and so combined them in a form of tattoos for either arm. One arm deconstructs, the other reconstructs. However, While they're getting ready to escape the city, he gives Scar his research notes because Scar has been trained as a warrior of the Ishvalan people, and he knows that his younger brother has a better chance of surviving this than he does.
Yikes! Okay.
At which point, they are attacked by the Crimson Alchemist Sulph J. Kimbley. Their parents and most of the crowd are immediately killed.
Because explosions.
Scar gets this terrible X-shaped wound over his forehead and loses his entire right arm up to the mid-bicep.
Okay.
So, in desperation, Scar's brother, which is the only name we're given for him, unfortunately.
That sucks.
Uses his knowledge of alchemy to transfer his arm to his brother.
Oh, wow.
At which point he is, and we don't know the intermittent part, but we do know he was recovered by the medical team headed by Winry's parents.
Okay.
He was brought to the place to be patched up. He was, but they were out of pain meds. So when he woke up, he was groggy, hazy.
And only remembered being in combat.
Especially when Dr. Rockbell leaned over to tell him that his wounds were still very sensitive and not to move so much. He had blonde hair and blue eyes, like most of the Amestrian soldiers.
I'm about to get murdered.
And when Scar raised his arm, he saw his brother's tattoos and initially thought his brother made it. At which point he realized it was his arm and flipped out.
Because what the heck is going on?
Yeah.
But moving on, we are running out of time.
Yeah, they capture Gluttony.
Okay.
Ling and Lanfan also had a very serious fight with Bradley and Gluttony. Mm. They barely escaped.
Good that they escaped it all.
Yeah. Lanfan lost her arm in the process. Mm. And not only lost
her... What's with everybody losing their arm?
Different arm.
I know, but what is with everybody losing their arm?
I don't know.
That's a common thing in this.
Regardless, she lost her arm. She lost use of her arm. And then, as a distraction to bait Bradley off their trail, she cut it off so that he'd follow the blood trail instead. They tied it to a stray dog. And she went to the sewers to hide while Ling went to help the others capture Gluttony.
Okay.
They managed to get out with him. But then, as they're arguing over who gets to use him, Gluttony remembers that Roy's the one who killed Lust and starts to flip out.
Okay.
At which point he reveals his power, which is the ultimate stomach, I'm calling it. We don't get an official title for it.
Okay.
He can swallow up anything.
Okay. No,
so they fight him briefly, Ling, Ed, and Al. And Envy shows up because they're not going to let Gluttony kill Ed or Al, or Mustang, it seems, even though he hasn't opened a portal, which it seems to be the through line of who they're thinking is important. They think he has the potential to open one. Regardless. So, they have a brief fight, and Ed and Ling and Envy all get swallowed, which is where we find out how the Ishvalan War started, which it was an Ishvalan child was killed by an Amestrian soldier. It was really Envy in disguise, and that set off a whole thing because the country was forcefully annexed, and that led to, and then tensions rising led to genocide after that.
Yeah, yeah.
We also find out that the reason Xerxes, which was advanced, fell, was because of a giant human transmutation circle, because part of the hieroglyphs that Ed saw implied that by its shape, and the other pieces were inside of Gluttony's stomach.
Mm.
Yeah, because they were covering their tracks. Ed develops a plan to get the three of them out of the stomach, while Al goes with Gluttony, who's very childlike, to potentially figure out a plan. And to help with this plan, Gluttony decides to take Al to their father.
Oh, boy.
And Ed's plan to get them out of the stomach works. Basically, he does human transmutation again to open up the portal of truth, because Gluttony, turns out, is a failed experiment by the homunculi's father to create his own portal of truth. Mm. But it failed. So it's a separate dimension, but somewhere between reality and truth. So, but by opening another human transmutation circle and allowing himself, Ling, and Envy to pass through it, they can end up back in the real world.
Okay.
Which works. And when when they pop out, they're in father's abode, which is underneath Central.
Yeah, kind of figured that.
And which is the center of the city, the center city of the entire country, and they find and. When Ed and Al see Father, they are taken aback because he looks shockingly like Hohenheim.
Ah.
To the point where they mistake him for their father. Mm-hmm. And when they mention the name Hohenheim, Father seems taken aback and is like, could you possibly be referring to Von Hohenheim? And how is it you know him?
He's our dad.
He's your father? That is indeed impressive. I had no idea he had children.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. That's not disturbing.
So they have a brief scuffle where Father just turns off their alchemy.
Okay.
They don't know how, but it's revealed later that he's placed, like, a barrier of himself, because he's also a gigantic homunculus, between the surface and the tectonic energy. So by shifting a certain way, he can shut off tectonic energy flow,
okay,
which makes Amestrian alchemy useless.
Okay.
During this fight, Ling, who is injured, Father sees potential in him. And since they killed the previous greed and reassimilated him back into Father, mm-hmm, Father decides that Ling might be useful and produces another Philosopher's Stone to turn Ling into the next greed.
Okay.
The Philosopher's Stone when given to a, when in, entered into the human bloodstream, will disassemble and reassemble the body over and over again, trying to take hold. And if it takes, they become a homunculus, which is how Bradley was made.
Okay.
And we're at time.
Well.
Well, I think that's
we just ran out of time.
It's just such a dense anime with an amazing story and beautiful character moments that, of course, it would take so long. But I'm afraid that's all we can cover in this one episode. Maybe we'll come back to it. Maybe not.
I know a bit about the greed thing.
Maybe
I do know about the merging of them a bit.
Regardless,
which is interesting.
Yeah. Regardless, maybe we'll come back to this, or maybe we'll have watched it together at that point. Regardless,
depends on how much time I have.
Regardless, that's all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you're still with us at the end, congratulations. Next week, what can we expect to hear about, Kay?
Y'all are gonna have to suffer through Cookie Run Kingdom. I like it a lot. It has lore.
We'll have fun with that, I guess. But
you don't sound enthused.
Well, we'll see. Regardless, thank you so much for listening with us. And we'll catch you next time. Bye!